This podcast was created using Anchor.
That's so good. I can't even compete for that. That's so good. Welcome back, everybody.
Welcome back to The Swirl with Bree and Dave. I'm Bree. Wow. Oh, no.
Yeah, we're out of practice. We're a little out of practice. It's a lot going on. It's been a month. Hasn't it, babe? Hasn't it been a month?
I don't know because I don't pay attention to this podcast.
That's really clear. pretty clear. But we're here and we're back. We
took a long break. We needed a break. Lots of things happened.
Yeah. We're going to talk about it all. That's what I decided.
Yeah. Today, you know, we're not doing a guest because we're just going to go back to normal. I don't know why it's so loud right now. Sorry.
I'm going to turn the volume
very
down.
Loud.
The volume. It's
Thank
just the
you.
Volume in the
okay,
room.
Okay, great.
Yeah.
A lot happened. So
we were doing this thing where we were doing like a special guest every week, or every other week, and a theme. And we decided we need to get back to basics.
Okay, basics are comedy, hilarity ensues, and I don't know what I'm
it's
doing.
It's just the two of us and the way it all began.
Yep,
that's right. Back to basique. Back to basics is what it is. When this whole thing started, we were on our couch and I just started talking.
Recording on a phone.
Nobody knew where it was going to go. And babe, we are approaching our 1 year anniversary of The Swirl with Bree and Dave.
Oh my God.
June 30th / July 1st will be the 1 year anniversary.
Wow.
And the question that we want to ask the kids is, should we go for year two? Or did we do it? Have we done it?
Is that really a question that we need to ask people?
Have we done this?
I feel that we've done it.
You feel like the swirl is done. We've gotten our taste of the swirl.
Well, this
and it's tasty.
This iteration of it.
Oh.
I feel that it's done. I wanted to do this to sort of, you know, the whole point of us doing this is because we wrote a pilot, you guys. We wrote a pilot that we really like, and it's about us, and it's about our relationship in New York City in the arts, being, you know, him being 22 years older than me and me being a black girl and all of that. And we wrote it and I wanted some direction with it because when we had a meeting with John Langrath from FX, sorry to drop that name.
Woof, let me pick that up for you.
David knows a lot of important people. But we had a meeting with him and he said, I don't want it to be from David's point of view. We don't need another show from a white man's point of view.
This is a white man saying this, mm-hmm. by the way.
Yeah.
Of European descent, I might add.
European. And so he said, you know, it's too soft for my network, but if you were going to do it, it would really need to be from Brianna's. And we had that meeting so long ago, like I think three or four years ago.
Well, yeah. And then we wrote the pilot and then he, you know, he liked it.
He just said it needed to be more me. And then we've watched a lot of television. And also like everything that's happened in the last year has really helped inform things. But also, it would be out of date, our pilot now.
Oh, yeah.
We would have to address, everyone talks differently. We'd have to address everything that's happened, the reckoning. You know, there's just so much content.
The pandemic, George Floyd.
The pandemic, oh my God.
And then everything that's happened on Broadway with racial justice and equality.
Yeah.
And that we were doing it about two people who worked on Broadway. Imagine if we brought that out now. It'd be like, well, wait a minute. You're not addressing any of those.
Right. So it's been really interesting. And I wanted to start the podcast to help sort of focus what our brand was. And this has really, really helped. And also just getting a fan base, getting people interested and listeners, and, you know, just understanding that we actually do have something that people are interested in and people want to hear us talk about. But how do we sort of shape that into a narrative that people would want to tune into every week?
Also, we've been married now for a year.
Yeah, and when we wrote it, we weren't married.
Almost 2 years now, I guess, we've been married.
Almost 2 years, babe.
So we've got some stories now, I think, that we can bring to it that when we were writing this pilot two and a half years ago, we didn't.
I think it was actually 3.5.
It might have been. So the question for me is, do we keep going or do we shut her down after a year? And we'll probably do one more, you know, anniversary episode, and then maybe that'll be the farewell for now. Or maybe, you know, depends on what kind of groundswell we get from the kids. Groundswell.
Well, you know, it's a really interesting time because it's the gray area. We've been in a pandemic for a year. People are restless. We're starting to open up, but not all the way. And some places aren't opening up. Some places are still like locked down. Like, I think places in California are still locked down. And it just feels very like I'm afraid to take a step forward because we might get pushed back, you know.
I don't think we're going to get pushed back.
I don't either, but I'm just saying it's a gray area for everyone. Also, Mercury is in retrograde.
Okay? That's the big issue.
And be careful of communication because it will break down.
And we are the exhibit A of communication breaking down in Mercury during retrograde.
Why would you say that?
Because
David's been crazy.
I've been nuts. I haven't been any good to be in a marriage with.
Well, that's not true. But he's been a lot. So, and I've probably been a lot too. So.
Well, there's been a lot going on.
There's been a lot going on.
Shall we get into it?
Let's get into it.
What a month.
All right, so today's June. It's June. But let me tell you, May.
She was crazy. She kept on screaming.
Actually, no. April, the end of April was fabulous. I went to Brighton Beach.
Mm-hmm.
And then
I joined you.
Yes. I went on a ladies' trip. And I can't tell you who the ladies were. Okay, everyone? But one day those photos will drop. One day.
Yeah, we can't talk about it.
And it was wonderful. And we were all vaccinated. So we just felt safer. And, you know, of course, we're outdoors most of the time anyway. So it was fine. Lots of Southerners who love to talk to beautiful Black women. So that was an interesting thing that we always have to deal with is, you know, we can't just be on vacation. We have to be like, you know, the teachers and the wise ones as well. Because, you know, I think when Southern white people see like clearly successful, beautiful, smart, funny Black women all traveling in a pack, it's a lot. Now, it's a lot for anyone.
It's my life.
Exactly.
And I love it.
Whether you're white, Black, Hispanic, Asian, it don't matter. When you travel in a group of beautiful women, it's, you know, it turns heads. But at a time like this, when everyone's kind of trying to escape the states, escape the politics, and they're on vacation in Mexico, it's always Mexico. And they always want to come up and talk. And it was very much like the last time we went last September, except
to Brighton Beach.
Except more people. And they were really wanting to know what we were doing and how we were doing. And I just think everyone expects you to just be ready to riot. And it's like, actually, I'm just on vacation. Can I just be on vacation? I mean, I am ready to beat anybody's ass who comes at me, but that's not where I stay. Like, I'm actually just trying to get some sun because I'm kind of yellow right now. You know what I mean? So it was an interesting trip, and it was interesting to see how all of us women dealt with that differently. Some of us were okay and open to talking to these new people, and some of us were over it, and everything was fine. To be either way is fine. Anyway, then David came to visit, and then we had a family trip with more friends, which was fabulous. And it was just, I got 13 days in Mexico. So it was
In Brighton Beach.
Beach. So it was really, really wonderful. And we came back. We had a couple weeks, and then the shit hit the fan.
Yeah, we were doing our raw vegan thing. We were slim and trim.
We were back on our cleanse. I got to my goal for Mexico, which I was very happy about.
I got way under my wedding weight. That was great.
And then,
what happened, babe?
And then I got a call that my father had had a heart attack. And that he had had 90% blockage in like three of his arteries. So they were not going to need to do a quadruple bypass. I got the call on Thursday. They were going to do it on Monday. Of course, nothing's ever guaranteed. Now, apparently, bypasses are very standard nowadays. They're not a big deal. I, of course, went right to my mother and her heart transplants, which are very different. So I got very worried. I was, you know, a little bit inconsolable. And then I was fine.
Your late mother, for those who don't know.
Yes, my mother, for those, I think you, some of you probably know from other episodes, but just in case, my mother passed away when I was 24. She had congestive heart failure. She had had it since I was born. She had a heart transplant right when I was born, and she had another one 8 years later. So she eventually passed away on the second heart after 16 years of having that second heart. And so when I think of cardiac disease or anything, I get very nervous because it's just like so old for me, that whole situation. Of course, my dad's situation is really, really different. My dad is older, but he takes really good care of himself, except for like occasionally some bad eating. But for the most part, he's always in the gym. He takes exercise really seriously.
He always looks at me sideways, like, what's happening? What's happening
no,
with
he
your...
No, doesn't. That's your own thing.
With your middle. What's going on?
A good night. And...
Can't say I blame him, but...
Anyway, so... And the bypass is apparently, like, routine. So what they do is they take veins from your either arms or lower legs, and they harvest them, and then they put them in your chest cavity... to your heart to create new pathways for blood for the so to replace the ones that are blocked.
Now somewhere in there they're cracking your sternum open too.
Well, of course, to get in that heart, into that heart.
And they did all of that to Percy, and within 5 days he was back home. So
gag.
Now there was more drama.
More drama. You know,
it's personal drama.
Personal drama that I won't get into on here, but man, isn't it interesting? Have you guys ever had that moment where you look at your parents and you're like, oh, you're just human beings and you don't have it all figured out, and you're like doing the best you can? Do you ever have those moments? I had that moment with my mom. I've had that moment with both my parents a long time ago, but they were very different moments. And I remember when my mom's sister passed away, she was inconsolable. And I had never seen her so sad. And I was rubbing her back and I was like, oh my God, I've never had to comfort my mother like this. She always does this for me. And I was like, oh wow, she's just a human being. She's sad. She misses her sister. Like, it just, you know, you make your parents into superheroes. And then life happens and you're like, oh, they're just people like us. And there are also moments where you realize that they don't have it figured out as parents. As well, they're just like getting by, figuring things out as they go, and you're sort of a guinea pig, and that's amazing. So I had that moment with my dad again, and eventually I had to get the hell out because I was confronted with things that I thought I had worked through that I had, but my level of understanding of those things has changed since I was in my 20s. I'm 36 now. So it's different. And when I look at the situation and I look at him and his behavior and I look at me and where I am, it's just different now. And I'm you know, we're on the down slope to 40. So it's not downslope, but you know what I mean. We're on the other side of 35.
Well, I'd reframe it as you're on the upswing to 40.
Yeah, that is true, because look at J-Lo. I'm trying to be like J-Lo, and she's 50.
I'm trying to be like Clint Eastwood, still making great art in his 80s.
And talking to chairs. Oh, my God. So yeah, it was a really interesting time. Have you ever had that with your parents, babe?
Sure. I think that's a thing everybody experiences.
It's a real out-of-body experience.
Now, I tried to frame that really early for my daughter so that she knew real early I was a human being. So that there'd be no delusions growing up. She was really clear from an early age. Daddy gonna fuck up. So get used to it now. Yeah.
Well, whatever. You're a great dad.
Thanks, babe.
You're a great dad, and you did whatever you needed to make things happen for Maddie, and you made a great woman.
Well, that's
so you
very
didn't.
Nice.
And guess what? My dad made a great woman.
That's right.
And my mom did. You know. Yep. So it's all how you deal with things. And I'm finding this is another thing I'm finding with people around me and also a lot of men in my family. I find that this is one of the reasons I couldn't take, you know, going home. I was there for 10 days and I was like, oof, I gotta get, because the men were driving me crazy. And there have been a few relationships in my family I've had to cut off because the men have been so coddled in their lives. And I don't know if it's because they're men and men are just prized, and that will never change, but like they never grew up, they never learned that there were consequences to their actions and bad choices. And so they're now like 40 and older expecting women to help them and do things for them and save them. And particularly the women in my family, and I'm over it. And then I looked around and I see that happening in a lot of people's families. And I just, you know, I wonder if people are as frustrated as I was in that moment. So I came back from Kansas City and I just took a moment to just detox from any toxic relationships that I had been exposed to. And I just was like, let me, or possibly toxic relationships. And I just said, let me just take a break, only speak to people who give me energy, who give me life, who give me confidence. And because I am that person for a lot of people, I have no problem raising up people, and because it doesn't take anything away from my shine, but a lot of people do. And so it was a really interesting month, and I learned a lot, and now I'm relearning boundaries, which I've always been really good at, but I'm relearning them, how to set them as a grown-ass woman, because I've always been good at it since I was a kid, and that's also why people like me, because I'm always clear, I don't want to do that, or I'd love to do that, let me plan it, you know. So this has been a learning experience. And now that Mercury's in retrograde, it's really a time for me to just zip it up and zip it out.
My, I had a professor in college who was a drama professor who later was in a 12-step program that he brought me into. And he used to say, your parents did the best they could. It's not their fault. They fucked it up completely. And it was that time that I learned forgiveness. Or, as Lin-Manuel Miranda once sang, forgiveness. Can you imagine? Forgiveness. I'm a little bit side-eyed about that moment in Hamilton.
It's all coming out, y'all.
Yeah, it's like, yeah, is that any good right there? Is that a thing?
You know what? We're not going to do slam theater right now. We're not, because it's trying to come back.
Oh, my God.
And it's
going to
be the
same. I never slam theater. This is a snark-free zone. I love
this
Hamilton.
This is, I always
Lin-Manuel
slam
Miranda's
it, but that's me.
Major talent.
Hey, guys, I don't know if you've had any time, but if you haven't, please tune in to my solo concert, Broadway by the Bay, which is still available to stream for $25 on the sandiegosymphony.org website. A lot of people have watched and it feels great, but please watch and spread the news because I'm actually pretty proud of it. It actually turned out decent.
It's pretty amazing. I mean, I've said my piece about it on the last pod a week ago.
Oh, that's right.
So if you want to listen to some excerpts from the from the concert, they're on last week's pod.
Yes.
Just kind of a bonus 12-minute promo pod that I snuck in.
It's only 12 minutes, and it's just because David's he's obsessed with me, you guys. Yeah. So.
And I just thought,
I was asleep while he did that. But I would just urge you to watch it. It's just a great 52 minutes of just nothing but Broadway. And you get to see me singing everything under the sun. And it's a little bit bizarre. Yeah.
Definitely, you don't want to miss it. It's 52 minutes of music theater heaven.
Honestly, like I say, get you a cocktail, get mm-hmm. a nice glass of wine or a very well-made Cosmo.
Mm.
And then, you know what? I loved what Maddie did. Maddie knitted, they put it on the television, and then Brandon was doing something and she was knitting. And they just they of course watched it, but they were mostly just listening, because to be honest, you never have to worry about notes being wrong when you watch it. So you can just relax and just do things around the house. And if you want to, you could look up at the screen and be like, wow, she's pretty. Or you cannot.
She's beautiful.
She's beautiful. From that angle.
So before we get into the big topics, I've got to just do an update on our analytics, which means, of course, that it's time for an analytics check. It's time for an analytics check. It's time for an It's time for an analytics check. Oof, we are out of practice.
Yours should be what is your?
I'm just doing melody. It's time for an analytics check. Should be analytics check, right?
Oh, so you're going down.
I'm just doing melody. You're harmony under it, over me. Ready? It's time for an analytics check.
You're really bad at singing together in harmony.
I used to be so good when I was in conservatory back in the 80s.
Ooh, that was on it. Good Jesus, 40 years ago.
I was on my Cantus Firmi, and I was just really brilliant. Babe, we have two new countries listening to The Soror with Bree and Dave.
Oh, my God.
Well, one of them is kind of a protectorate state, and one of them is a country. But still... Me.
Okay, tell us where they are.
We have listeners now in. We finally did it, babe. We did it.
Africa?
France.
Oh! Yes, France!
Oh, baguette.
No, David.
What's
No.
Is there a Book of Mormon we were going to France?
No.
Gnomes and trolls? No.
No.
No? Okay. No.
But welcome to our French listeners. Comment allez-vous?
Bonjour.
Bonjour.
Ou bonsoir.
Qu'est-ce que tu fais aujourd'hui?
La fleur que tu
Je m'appelle Brianna et David.
La fleur que tu m'avais jetée dans ma prison m'était restée. That's a Carmen aria, and I'm getting an eye roll.
Quel dommage. Okay, so we're just throwing French out at you. P.S., if anyone wants to tutor me, I did take French for 4 years. Mm. I passed out of my test requirement for college because I was actually pretty good at reading and understanding it. But I haven't spoken it in so long, and I want to go to France and speak to people. Because you guys love it when Americans try to speak to you in French.
I know.
They love it.
That time I was in Paris, and I got in a cab, and I was really using all of my College Conservatory of Music French opera singing training to explain where I wanted to go, and the cabbie knew where I wanted to go, and he just acted like I didn't know what I was saying, and it was really, and he kept mispronouncing what I was pronouncing very carefully.
You're pissed. You're still pissed.
I'll never get over it. So guess you went.
Okay, so shout out to France. We love you.
We love you, France.
Yes.
And the second place, babe, this is a gag.
Africa.
Puerto Rico.
Puerto Rico! In the Heights. I drink my coffee. I don't actually know in the Heights.
I don't either. I just go in but the Heights. Know. It's where we're going to dance all day. Okay, maybe this
Puerto
accent
is. Puerto Rico.
Hey. Anyway, Puerto Rico, we love you.
Hi, Puerto Rico. You know what? I want to go there.
Okay, we're going. We have listeners there, so
I
we
actually
have no excuse.
Really want to go there for a long weekend.
Yes.
Honestly, from a Thursday to a Monday would be perfect.
So me questioning anything about Hamilton and Lin-Manuel Miranda's work at the end of Hamilton, I retract. We love everything.
We love. No, we do love.
We actually do love.
We do love.
We do. And we do. So yeah, Puerto Rico.
Wow.
Can
okay.
you believe it?
Well,
it's exciting.
Do you think that's like Efren's family?
Maybe.
That maybe.
No, he's Cuban. Racist.
But he doesn't have family in Puerto Rico?
Maybe. Yeah, no, he does.
I'm not crazy.
Okay. I just love to call you racist. It's like my favorite thing.
Okay, well, welcome our new listeners in France and Puerto Rico.
And that was our analytics check.
And thank you.
And that was our analytics check.
You keep trying to go higher.
It's just I get excited and then that drives my pitch sharp.
And that was our analytics check. Still sharp.
It's fine. I don't, you know what I mean? I don't have it anymore, babe.
No, you do. You just need to use the muscle. You have to use the muscle.
Or you lose it.
You lose it. That one you do lose.
All right, babe. Here's the list of topics that we could handle that have been basically coming up in the last month.
Okay.
And they're really big, big, heavy topics. You
Give
ready?
It to me.
Israel / anti-Semitism.
Eek.
Tulsa Massacre.
Ooh.
The increase in AAPI hate crimes continues.
Is it really?
Yeah.
Oh my God.
So we have our friends Pearl and Aaron, and they did, you have to check it out, the emergency podcast we did this season. And I want to just kind of keep the drumbeat going on all of these things. They don't get better.
Wow.
They never go away. We always have to stay vigilant. So, you know, just check out Pearl Ray Sun on Instagram and Aaron Quill on Instagram because they're really, really good about keeping you up to date on stuff. And that's how I know these incidents kind of keep happening.
Gosh, I haven't really been on, but...
But the other thing that I will say while we're on the subject, and I will get back to my list, but while we're on the subject, you know, and I don't know how deep you want to get into it, but I love cross-cultural, cross-currents of allyship and support. And when I knew when Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, who I adore, came out and began to immediately equate the situation in Israel with American history of racism, that was going to, first of all, that's a really simplistic prism to view Israel through. And also, I knew that was going to end up resulting in anti-Semitic hate crimes in America because anti-Semites don't need an excuse to act out their anti-Semitic hate crimes. They will absolutely take any reason given to them to act on their hatred. So I knew, like, that was going to be a bad thing. And
what exactly did she say?
She was equating the Palestinian and Israeli conflicts with the American racial history, equating Palestinians with African Americans and white supremacists with Israelis, with Israeli Jews, which, if you know anything about the history of Israel and Jews, is fucking hilarious.
Right.
So she did that, and then I thought, oh, okay, that's going to be bad. And then it became, you know, and I think these are nuanced conversations, and I'm here to have them, having kind of spent some time re-immersing myself in the conversation, which I'm really not anymore. I'm not like a scholar about or any more equipped than anyone else to have a conversation about. But as an American Jew, I knew that was going to be a thing. And sure enough, it was a real thing. So to get back to allyship, there when that started to blow up, I just noticed a deafening silence from activists who are really at the forefront, and I'm at the forefront with them on Black allyship, Black Lives Matter, all of these issues going on in our community, and some of my Asian activist friends who actually
silent.
Did step up and say, "Hey, this isn't okay either."
Yeah,
and we have to call this out wherever it lands. I call out anti-Palestinian hate and the disproportionate response of of mm-hmm. an Israeli response
right.
in that part of the world. But it is an issue that has nuance and history. And also, well, then you throw religion into it. So.
Well, when we talked about this, you kind of were telling me, because I don't really know much about it, and I knew it was so much more complicated and historical than people on social media are making it. And you said that the Palestinians, like the radical Palestinians, radical, okay, not... We have to remember that this is only a small group of these people.
Any more than we can paint all white people in America as Trumpers.
Exactly. That they have wanted for hundreds of years for Jews to be cast out.
Well, if you were to Google the phrase from the river to the sea, just Google mm-hmm. it, what you'd find is that that is a phrase that some people started to use very poetically, you know, on social media in America. But what it actually is, unbeknownst to them, is it is a call to for the obliteration of the Jewish people in the state of Israel. And the argument that, you know, it's sort of a who got there first kind of thing goes back to, you know, before Christ. It goes back, you know, thousands and thousands of years. And the Jews, you know, lay a claim to that. And they have their temple and their second temple, and their temple was destroyed, and the Al-Aqsa Mosque was put on top of it, and that's what's there now. And I'm like, I have been to Israel more than once, and the Israelis I know want to live in peace with the Palestinians in the same place, and you cannot equate the Israeli people with the Israeli government and the government of Netanyahu any more than you could equate if you and I were in America, and now I'm doing this comparison, but if you and I were in America and everywhere else in the world, they started to equate all Americans with Donald Trump. It's just not something that is fair. That's not what, and Netanyahu, I believe, is pretty much maybe this time on his way out. But it's the part that's interesting to me is that we can't we can't forget who was there for us when we needed them and then abandon them when they need us. And so thank you to Pearl and to Aaron and to my friends, then some friends who, you know, on all sides and everywhere, who really did recognize that none of us deserves to not feel safe in our own homes. Mm-hmm. That goes for Palestinians. And that goes for Jews, and that goes for American Jews, which is a whole separate thing from Israeli Jews. Mm-hmm. And even among Israeli Jews and American Jews, there are many different ways of thinking, living, and believing. So I'm probably good, unless you have questions you want to ask me about that. I'm probably good on that subject.
No, because we don't know enough about it. But we, you know, for a few weeks, especially while we were in Kansas City, that was really coming up. Just because, you know, David felt like, come on, where are the people speaking out about this? There's people getting beat down in New York City. And the activists, the people who are leading this change, at least on social media, were nowhere to be found. And it's like, okay, because are we not speaking out because they have white skin? So you're just equating them with colonizers, which is... ridiculous. And you know, whenever people ask is your husband white, like I say, no, he's not, he's Jewish. Because it's very different to be partnered with someone who understands hatred and slavery and genocide with you. And I don't know those things, because obviously I wasn't raised in a time where like that was happening against me. You know, in 2000, in the year 1990 or 2000, that I really was aware of it. By that time, it was like put into the laws and put in redlining and all that kind of thing. It was like put into things so that it hurt me, but I had no idea. But I know what it is to feel generational, ancestral, like trauma and pain. I know what that is to carry it. And I'm with someone who also understands that, whether we're conscious of it or not. And that is different than being married to a European And nothing is wrong with being married to a European, but I'm just saying I really like our relationship because it connects on that level, on a really deep level. So I was wondering, you know, and I wasn't even aware that I wasn't speaking up about it, but I wasn't speaking up because I honestly was so taken with my dad and everything we were doing in Kansas City. I didn't even know that there were attacks. And then once I found out, it was like, oh my gosh, I need to say something because I don't want my husband to feel like no one's speaking up for him. But it is a really, it's just a scary time. It's a scary time. And there are so many people believing misinformation. We talked about this yesterday with a couple friends of ours. There's so much. This is the age of misinformation, is what one of our friends said, and it's so true and it's so dangerous. So I don't want to speak too much about it because we don't know major details. I'm sure you know more than
I feel like
a
I'm,
lot of people.
I feel like I'm up to date on it, but I just, for the purposes of whatever enlightenment I can bring to this podcast in particular, I just think it has to do with me feeling like the people who felt very empowered to speak about this particular issue on behalf of the Palestinian side of things somehow were hiding behind a lack of deep knowledge when it came to having to defend the result, which was anti-Semitic hate crimes, which for the first time in my life, I'm much older than I ever intended to be, I have felt really the sting of anti-Semitism all around me in the past 5 years since Trump, like I never have before, and the rise of white supremacy in this country.
Oh yeah, I think everybody feels that.
So I'm a part of that, and before that, I was, you know where I was, babe.
What?
I was marching on the streets. Like, you know, in the civil rights movement in the 60s, my Jewish ancestors were marching out there on the streets. Chaney and Schwerner died in Mississippi.
That's true. That's true. Jews have had our back for a long time, so let's get together, y'all.
Thanks, babe. Okay. So the other big topic.
Yeah.
And I don't know if we even want to get into this.
I don't. Can you just say it?
Well, let's talk about Broadway reopening.
Okay.
That's just a great thing.
Is that the topic?
That's the topic.
Oh, okay. So I see. We downplayed it. Broadway reopening. I mean, okay.
So
it's complicated.
Let me just start with a here's some reporting in the New York Times. Ready?
I think so.
All of the new plays announced for Broadway this fall are by Black writers. Two are commercial productions, Kenan Scott II's Thoughts of a Colored Man, about a single day in the life of seven Black men in Brooklyn, and Antoinette Chinonwe Nwandu's Passover, about two Black men trapped by existential dread in a society where too many Black people are killed by police. We are leaning into the conversation that's happening in America, said Brian Moreland, a lead producer of Thoughts of a Colored Man, which is aiming to open in October. There will also be three nonprofit productions of plays by Black writers on Broadway. Clyde's, a new play by Lynn Nottage, presented by Second Stage. Lackawanna Blues, a one-man show by Ruben Santiago Hudson, presented by the Manhattan Theater Club. And Trouble in Mind, a classic play by Alice Childress, getting its first Broadway production via the Roundabout Theater Company. Now, before I cede the floor to you, I want to also make a point that those things may seem like progress, but yesterday,
Well, first of all, I want to talk about that because that photo you're talking about. So first of all, David Lai was in that. It was only the Phantom casting group. So it was Tara Rubens, but it was also they were specifically saying Phantom. David Lai was in that photo. He is Asian. I'm just saying there were people of color in the photo.
Okay.
And I don't know who else. I think there's another person in there, but he's the conductor, obviously.
Yeah.
We're talking about a photo that Tara Rubin Casting put out. Please read the quote, babe, when you get it. But it's
1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11 people in this photo. One of them, David Lai, is Asian. In the blurb of the photo, the producers, creative, and casting teams at Phantom are committed to creating a safe space for everyone who enters into the casting process with us. We are thrilled to be embarking on a journey to a better Broadway with everyone! Exclamation point. This is accompanied by a photo of the casting team for Phantom, which has 11 people, one of whom is Asian and the rest of whom are white. And we're so happy that Broadway's coming back, and we're so thrilled that you know, people are going to have jobs again, and we're thrilled that my friend Lucy St. Louis in the UK production of the London production of Phantom will be the first Black Christine.
Amazing.
Which is amazing and all progress, but I'm sorry to, and I have so much respect for that office, but I'm so stunned that 14 months later you would put a photo on Instagram touting that you're going to be back at Better Than Broadway, and in no time in the past 14 months have you hired one person of color, other than you have one Asian person, which is wonderful, but obviously might be considered, you know, insufficient when the conversation is really about equity, diversity. I probably shouldn't be saying this, and maybe Tara Rubin's casting office will never work with me. But I say this with respect. I just found it to be pretty tone deaf of a thing to do.
Yes.
With all respect. It counters.
Sorry, I'm now reading the comments, which are hilarious. Have you looked at the comments?
Pick one.
Well, this is from Anish, the actress. This is appalling. And what's even more harmful is the number of friends and colleagues commenting on this post in celebration. What in the actual fuck? Have you literally learned nothing this past year? Infuriating, painful. White people will always uplift and serve whiteness, white supremacy, and white power.
So I had that reaction. I mean, I didn't read the comments. I just saw it when it posted, and I was like, oh God, what are we doing? What happened? So that obviously is a countervalence to the good news that the first shows, like, and not just one or even two, but five that are coming back to Broadway are Black writers, Black female writers, Black stories, Black casts.
I'm just
you're now you're in the rabbit hole. I've sent my wife down a rabbit hole. Didn't mean to do that.
No. It's just
because this is a conversation I want to have, because
I'm playing devil's advocate, because it's very specific to the Phantom team.
Okay.
So I totally get it, but they do say we're so excited to be back in the room with the Phantom team. So these are the people who cast Phantom of the Opera.
Right.
So I'm not like, okay. The producers, creative, and casting are committed to creating a safe space. I think they're talking about for COVID, which is stupid.
Really?
Yeah, because they all have masks on in the photo. So they're talking about a healthy, safe space.
But the conversation about a safe space in the past year
exactly
has been about not having only all white people on a creative team or in a cast.
Absolutely. And so this is why it's missing the mark, because it's like, those were the wrong words to say. But what they're saying is it's a safe space because, look, we're all wearing masks in this photo, which I think is disturbing.
Well, it's just, where have you, but again, it does,
but it
where
is.
Where have y'all been?
It's completely tone deaf. And Tara Rubin is actually one of my, she's actually probably my favorite casting office in this city. Their office looks at me for all kinds of roles constantly. They send me straight to offer most of the time, and they never pigeonhole me in simply Black female roles. Almost never. So I actually love their office. I will say I do sometimes expect that it's like a very young sort of, like, you have to just play the role. And you have to do this in the business in general. But I feel in the Tara Rubin office, you don't have to not be yourself. So I'm a little bit like, Tara, hello. But we also don't know what these casting offices are doing, because things are just rolling out. They may have people on the thing who are not in the Phantom casting team. They may have people of color who they've, you know, put on the roster. So we don't know that. And I'm finding that because we're in the gray area and people are so tired of being in the pandemic, and not seeing results, that they're getting very impatient. And that people are like, I don't see any change happening. And I'm like, well, I don't see any jobs still. We don't have jobs still. We're all still unemployed. And yes, we've announced some dates for people to go back to rehearsal, but we won't see real change for another like 3 or 4 months. And that'll just be the start. We won't really see it until next year. So I think people are just getting impatient, number one. I also think that they missed the mark on this Instagram post in more than one way. And I just would urge people to just stay positive and, you know that changes are happening behind the scenes. Just because they're not on Instagram and you can't see them in front of you, it doesn't mean they're not happening. And you know that, David.
Yep.
Better than anybody.
Oh my God. Yes.
So, yes, this post is whack, but I think
in a word
it's whack, but let's stay vigilant and let's stay positive and let's keep working for change.
And by the way, whack as an adjective is spelled W-A-C-K.
No, W-H-A-C-K.
Whack, W-H-A-C-K, is the verb, to whack at something.
Oh.
It has the H in it.
Okay, well,
something that is whack is an adjective, W-A-C-K, without the H. I feel like it's important.
Okay, cool. Well, we learn something every day.
That's the most important thing.
Back to Broadway reopening. Sorry, I don't want to get off topic.
No, I was about to get back to the topic with a question for you.
Go.
With all of these shows coming back, with all black casts to Broadway, including MJ, mm-hmm. Hamilton, Hadestown, Moulin Rouge, shows that have diverse casts.
Diverse casts, yeah.
Should we quit our jobs that we don't have yet?
Oh, well, you know how I feel about this.
And you may not want to answer.
What you talking about?
But should we burn it all down?
You know how I feel. You know how I feel. In order to burn things down, you have to have some type of backup,
plan
strategy. Or strategy or infrastructure.
There you go.
And we don't have that. And we are.
You mean Broadway is our infrastructure?
It is our infrastructure. We work in commercial theater, people. I'm sorry. Most of the time, it's about money, not about the quality of art. This is Broadway. Now, it has gotten worse. Don't get me wrong. But we have to remember that the tourists, you always say this, are the people who pay our rent. And the tourists are not New York Times reviewers and people who went to school for, you know, the tourists are 9-to-5ers who are on vacation with their families. They don't want to see any black or gay shows. I mean, they say that. And they want to see Aladdin. They want to see the movie musicals.
But they want to see Hamilton and they want to
see. And they also want to see, exactly.
And they wanted to see Kinky Boots.
Exactly. No.
Well, Kinky Boots ran.
It did run. But there are, I have had many friends work at TKTS and tourists come up and specifically say, we don't want to see anything gay and we don't want to see anything black. And they will send them to Kinky Boots to be funny. but
I love that.
Oh, absolutely.
That's good.
So I think we have to remember that this is just like the commercial theater. The world we live in serves the people who are paying the top dollar to see our shows. And then we also make some things that are very inspiring and artistic for us. But really, how else are you going to pay this rent? You got to pay this rent with these tourists coming through. And if you don't have shows that hit the mark for them, which sometimes are shows that we don't respect as much, but guess what? They employ your friends. So like, keep it moving. Like, deal with it. Know that sometimes you're going to be in a show that's a hit and it's a movie musical. And sometimes you're going to be in a show that's incredible, like Porgy and Bess, and it'll run for 8 months and then it's over. Because people just, it doesn't have, you know, a long life because of the highbrowness of it all, right? And so commercial theater is that. You got to fit what you can into it. I think, what was my thought?
Well, my question was, these shows that are specifically the example of the thing we want, shows by,
yes,
about, and four.
Oh, so
black
are those
people,
piece of
should, mm-hmm. should those things are scheduled and booked. Those theaters are. We have our friend Doug Lyons who's got a
show on Broadway, Chicken and Biscuits.
So those shows are happening. They're scheduled for this coming season.
Mm-hmm.
Should we quit so those shows don't happen?
No.
Should we be the shows that should the people who are in those shows who are representing the change we want to see, people of color who are in leading roles in those shows, should Andre DeShields quit his job?
Night-night.
In Hadestown? I'm just saying, because this seems to be the groundswell, the question.
Well, it's kind of shut down. I mean, it was the groundswell about a month and a half ago. Now it's kind of...
You think that's petered out now?
It's petered out because people are being real. Like, if you have a job, no, you should not quit your job, especially if you are a person of color on Broadway or about to be on Broadway or about to have your show on Broadway.
Should you quit your job if you're a white person in Book
of
Mormon?
In my opinion, no. In my opinion, no. All we can ask for is allyship. And that's what everyone was so insistent about last summer. And now it's like allyship isn't enough. Now we need you to just quit your job. Well, how are you going to do the work from the inside? I mean, look, there are wonderful people who speak up for Black people, for Asian people, for Latina people. Like, you know what I mean? Like, there are people who are our allies and we need them in those positions. And everybody has to be realistic. It's not going to be this sudden changeover where it's not a white patriarchal society. That's not what's happening. We have to slowly change the books and the numbers. And that means getting people who want equity for everyone in those positions and also getting people of color who've not necessarily had it all these years in those positions. We have to work together. So in my opinion, nobody should be quitting their jobs, in my opinion. Now, that being said, I do think that just what theater is, I hate to say it, but it is a luxury. There are people who, like myself and David, who are gifts. David's gift, he can write a lyric in no time and it's brilliant. My gift is I can pick up music and I can make it sound incredible in very little time. And that's what we do. We love what we do. However, it's a luxury to be able to do that, to have jobs that we love, and most people do not. And most people never even know their purpose or their calling in life. And a lot of people never are aware of what their gifts are. Even if their gifts are simple, like they communicate well with all types of people or whatever, like a lot of people are not aware of that. So anyway, we've been so blessed with this calling, but we are not necessarily, we're not stuck in those positions. The hard part is that our what we do is so inconsistent. It's so up and down. It's feast or famine, right?
And for the past year, it will be a year and a half,
it's been famine.
Shut down completely.
Yeah, shut down completely. So the thing about that is it brings theater, because of what it is, it brings some people, and I hate to say it, but some people who are very, I don't know how to say this point, but I don't know how to say it other than what I mean, which is it brings a lot of mediocre white people to the field because people...
Well, there's never a shortage of mediocre white people in any field.
It's true.
We're always flooding the zone.
But I think about where I'm from in Kansas City, and I think of... even the people I went to college with and blah, blah, blah. And I'm not saying they're mediocre white people, but I'm saying they were people who loved theater and had the money to go to a private school and study theater, but then actually didn't end up doing theater at all. And that's kind of a luxury to go, I'm going to spend 4 years and a whole lot of money studying something I actually am not going to do. And for me, I never had that luxury. I had to make that decision and go full out, and I had to frickin' make it. You know what I mean? Because I knew that was the one thing I knew I could be successful at, that I was good at. And of course, there are other things I could be successful at, but I didn't want to do those things. And what I'm saying is that there are white people in these rooms with black people and all types of people, transgender people, in these theater rooms now, who have no idea how to deal with different types of people because they came from Kansas City, where the demographic is white mostly. They've maybe hung out with some black people and they literally don't know anyone from other countries. Like, they don't know any. This is how I was. I didn't know a lot of different, you know, diversity.
You thought Jews had horns until you were 22.
But can I be real? I didn't know Jewish people. I did know, because I did go to a bat mitzvah when I was 14, but I didn't understand what that bat mitzvah was and what it meant to be Jewish. I didn't understand any of that. I did not have a lot of Jewish people around me. I also went to a Catholic school, so of course that's the thing. But like, I think there is a lot of room for error when you get in a business like theater where it calls black folks and anybody of color who comes into theater, that road is much harder than a white person who chooses theater. And people work very hard and very long to get to Broadway. And there are some white people who don't, there are white people who work really hard. And then there are some white people who don't work as hard because doors are just open to them faster and sooner. This is why I'm 36 and not like a household name. And that's ridiculous. I should be one. But because I'm not a little, I think if I were like a frail white girl, I might actually be working more because sometimes my voice sounds like a white lady. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And so
if you could be either frail or white,
but not both.
No, both would be even double.
Well,
better.
That'd be better. Yeah. So what I don't even know if I'm making this. Am I making this point, babe?
You've made it.
Oh, OK.
Now, really? Not to shut you off, but you are making it.
I hope I don't want anyone to feel like I'm calling anybody mediocre or white, but I just think that.
Well, some people are white.
And some people are mediocre. But I think being of color in this business, you have to be super, super self-aware. And you also have to be able to adapt to many different rooms that don't look like you. And white people just don't have to deal with that. And so when they get into a room with theater people, they say with other theater people from other walks of life, sometimes white people say crazy things.
Yeah.
Just in life in general, at a resort in Mexico, in a theater room where you're working very closely with people and you're expected to bond really quickly as a cast and a family. And that's hard to do when you don't trust people or their experiences.
Theater is just, as it should be, a microcosm of the rest of the world.
Yes.
So becoming successful in theater, as arduous and painstaking and all the training and the years it can take, you have to add being black in America to every black person who got in that room.
Right.
And that goes for everything in America, and it's especially true in theater. And all of the stuff you have to contend with that goes along with that is not something that white people getting into the room have to contend with.
So they're unaware. Sometimes they're just unawares.
And it doesn't mean, like, I've had horrifying ups and downs as a white person, even as a Jewish person in what's supposed to be a simple industry for white Jews. Like, really horrifying ups and downs. But we all have them.
Yes.
But what I haven't had to deal with is being suspected of not being good enough just because I was black.
Right.
As the first wall of entry.
This point because I was trying to do the other side of the coin, because I don't think white people should be quitting their jobs because they're white and they want to make space for black people or other people of color. I don't think that's the answer, but I am aware that there are white people in the rooms who do more harm than help. And so it is hard to know, but I think if people have pledged to be an ally to us, then we should let them be that.
I think that's right. I mean, you want to kind of wait and see until
you have
we're
to,
back
yes.
and to see if there's been any progress at
yes,
all.
Yes, because everyone's sitting here going, oh, there's no changes. And it's
burn
like,
it all
well,
down.
Yeah, but there's been no change because there's still no industry. We're still not back, boo.
And I would just argue that what we do know of what's coming back in the industry
is
a
huge change.
Well,
yes.
I agree. I think it's huge.
I think it's huge change. And I think it's so necessary. And it unfortunately means that projects that are beautiful and thoughtful and well written, like some of your projects.
Thanks, babe.
Go to the, you know, they don't go first in line, because right now the issue being addressed is making it more equitable from all sides, from people behind the table, in front.
Two things about that. One thing, I'm going to be fine. And the second thing is that I've been aware of this all along. So like when I've been working...
Yes, this is not new.
So thank God. So when I've been working on the stuff that I have in my own pipeline, mm-hmm. I've been aware of it. So like those of you who've worked with me on these workshops and the things that I've done, you know that like there's, you know, in my musical about the white Jewish...
Yeah, you're very aware of race, and you are putting things, you're putting diverse casts together, you're putting storylines that matter together, you're making, you know, people of color the moral center of shows, like more often than not. And it's on purpose what you're doing.
Well, and I thank you,
because this change in the industry has been happening slowly for a while, and then Hamilton really sped it up. And you know what? I'm grateful to everything that happened last year, because that sped it up too. And you have said in the past, like, we really need those radical activists that sometimes are a lot. We need those people, because they bring, what did you say, people from the left.
They bring people from the far right. They bring them to the center.
To the center,
so
yeah.
So then the center becomes something more equitable.
Yes.
I mean, I really pointed out to, like, you know, Martin really needed Malcolm.
Right.
They had a symbiotic relationship.
Martin Luther King and Malcolm X, everybody.
And that formula pertains today. So there are those moments where, you know, we really do. We need the people who seem like they're just really extreme. So you go, well, we're not going to be that extreme. But at the same time, what we are going to do is recognize that maybe the first two or three shows back shouldn't be all white shows with all white casts. So we're going to have the first two big Broadway shows back, you know, beginning to address that. And then the three regional theater shows that are going to Broadway will also be addressing that head on. And that is progress, even though it's, in this case, five steps forward and two or three steps back, because we still have to deal with, like, a clueless posting on Instagram of a major firm.
Yes. Yeah. And that, I wouldn't say that was two or three steps back, but I do... I just think
I'm lumping the Music Man in with that too.
Oh, okay, sure. The Music Man is.
But that's just me.
Yeah,
and I love.
Right.
Listen, and y'all should go to work and do that job. It's one of the greatest shows in the history of musical theater, and everyone needs to like see it and know what it is. I'll probably skip this one personally, mm-hmm. but you know, it's an important show in the canon.
Yeah, but here's the gag, though. When your show is really good, it doesn't matter who plays the roles. It doesn't matter what they look like.
And Hamilton really should have taught us that.
Right. They speak for themselves. So it's unfortunate that those producers, and I don't even know if...
Well, that was a Scott Rudin show.
Yeah, but is he still on it?
No.
But is he kind of like behind it, though?
You know, he's stepped away from it. The question was, is he going to still receive, you know, money from it? Which the answer to that is probably certainly yes.
Yeah.
You know, those shows haven't announced when they're coming back. His shows have not announced when they're returning, which tells me that, you know, because everyone's pretty much announced when they're coming back. But not To Kill a Mockingbird, and I don't think Music Man, and he had another show that has not been announced for when it's coming back. And that tells me that they're actually, you know, he's really not hanging out and making decisions. But...
Well, we'll see. We will see, and we'll keep you all posted. But yeah, that's a really... It's a complicated
conversation. We haven't known whether we wanted to have it all this time, but I figured, you know, since we're back, let's do all the big issues and make this the big issues episode.
Great.
Episode title.
All right, how do you feel? Are we done with the topics?
We're done with the topic. Let's just do real quick shows we're watching.
Mare. Mare.
Mare.
Mare.
Mare. Mare of Easttoon.
Mare of Easttoon. Toon.
Home. You gotta go home.
Home.
You gotta go home to Pennsylvania.
Home. How do you do that?
Home.
Home. Wait.
So I don't know if Norman Weiss is listening. He was my high school music teacher. And then he moved to New York and became the accompanist for the Fantastics, and then Phantom became the music director. He's brilliant. But he used to get on the kids in Cincinnati at the School for Creative and Performing Arts, because they were doing that in Cincinnati, that accent. him.
That Pennsylvania accent.
It kind of found its way down.
The Mayor of Easttown is a show on HBO Max. If you don't have HBO Max, I'm sorry. We tell you every week to get HBO Max. The programming is two thumbs up.
Yeah.
Fine holiday fun. I think it's okay. The show is okay. I you know what I'm mad at? Kate Winslet, that's my boo.
Yeah.
And they're trying to ugly her up. They're trying to make her look like she eats constantly and she's out of shape. And guess what? She's still beautiful. So I don't have time for it. I think it's kind of you want to watch, but I think some of the scenes are slow and, you know, it's a lot. It's very dark.
It's very dark, but we're enjoying it.
But we are enjoying it, and we're on episode 5.
Yes.
Yeah.
Well, no, so, we're almost done. We got one more to go. We're almost through episode 5. We kind of...
So we got...
We conked out about 15 minutes to
the end.
There's
8 episodes,
no, there's
right?
6.
Oh, night.
It's shorty.
I don't know how they're going to wrap this up.
Oh, we don't know.
Anyway, so that's one thing we're watching, and then what's the other one?
Well, we're loving Hacks.
We love Hacks. Jean Smart and...
Hannah Einbinder.
Hannah Einbinder, who's really, really funny to me.
Saw her on the Colbert. She did a comedy set. She was super funny. And then she shows up on this show. And
it's about
fantastic.
A stand-up comic, an older female stand-up comic, and a younger female stand-up comic. And
well, she's not a stand-up comic; she's a comedy writer.
A comedy writer, excuse me. You're right. And
they get forced together.
They get forced together.
Their will.
Hilarity ensues.
Hilarity ensues. But then also deep historical wounds begin to get uncovered that deal with sexism and and show business in a way that I think is, it just gets deeper and deeper. And actually,
yeah, it's really funny. It's also really touching. So we would definitely want you to tune into that. Also on HBO Max.
Again.
Sorry. What else?
So we've gone through all of Breaking Bad. We've talked about this. We're now back into season 5 of Better Call Saul. So we're catching up for when Better Call Saul comes back in 2022. Really, what a show. Wow.
We love it. We love it, but it's not everyone's taste. Breaking Bad is very dark for a lot of people. A lot of people I know were like, I tried it and it's just too disturbing. And I get it. It's very intense. And Better Call Saul is also very intense, but it has a much lighter sort of approach because it's from Saul Goodman's point of view, right?
It's a lot about the law. A lot of times it doesn't have that, you know, pulse racing, people are dying every second, and you know, but I actually love how it navigates all of that subtlety, and it's a little slow moving in terms of story moves, but it's never not incredibly fascinating
and really well thought out.
Really well thought. Oh my god, the that writer's room sitting there working out those arcs for that season.
Incredible.
I don't know how they do, like, something like, most of the time I watch a TV show and I'm like, I think I could be in that room and contribute, and I know what they're doing. That show, I have no idea how they do what they do.
Yeah.
And it's brilliant.
Yeah.
So that's the highest compliment I can give. So I have a question for you, babe, speaking of TV shows.
Love questions.
Is Bill Maher irredeemable trash? Or can we pull up?
I love Bill Maher, but I don't want him to speak on race anymore.
Not anymore.
No more.
Stop.
No more. It's done, Bill. Let it go.
Yeah. I agree with that assessment. Other than that...
You just sound so dumb. He's listening. You just sound so dumb.
Like, friend of the pod. Bill Maher.
And I think that's his thing, is like, I'm a white old man. Who cares how I sound? But
that's a really good imitation.
But you have a responsibility to actually, like, first of all, fucking read the articles and watch the news and know what you're saying. Because on some things, he's so smart and so
read. Well, he had
that
interview with Sharon Osbourne.
And then he has that interview with Sharon Osbourne. He has really no idea why she has been kicked off the show. And I'm like, did you watch that clip, Bill?
Apparently
because you're
not.
Sitting here acting like, oh, it's because she said something about Piers Morgan and they called you a racist. I mean, yeah, that was annoying. But also, it's mostly because you barked at your co-host and completely disrespected a grown-ass woman on national television.
Amen.
And you're completely racially insensitive.
Yeah.
Because you're British and racism is also deeply rooted in your, you know,
culture.
So I was just like, Bill, you gonna do your homework or no? I mean, it was ridiculous. And then he again got on there talking about race for something else. And I was like, oh my God, you have to stop. You have to stop. You've got your little solar shack built. Go sleep in it and sit down.
Well, you answered my question. All right. And then my last thing.
And that's so unfortunate because I really do like Bill Maher. Yeah. And I think he's so right on about the whole everybody being offended nowadays and comedy being a different type of thing. You should be able to. I totally agree with that stuff. But the things on race, I'm like, it was about the workplace and why we needed to have people come in and teach people how to speak to people of color in the workplace. And he's like, well, why do they get to decide? And it's like, this is the same point I just said. People get in rooms with people from all different backgrounds and they have a very limited scope and they say crazy shit and they make the workplace horrible, unsafe, not equitable, and toxic. And I'm sorry, but if you need some people of color to come in and go, this is how you speak to black people, then that's what it is. Unfortunately, that's the kind of country we live in. It's that polarized. Anyway, go ahead. Sorry.
That was it.
I'm not having it.
I guess my last thing is I just want to say, you know, you and I have to speak in defense of American Idol. But, big but. We're back to pick the mediocre white man over the worthy black man.
And I thought Chase has a beautiful soul and I love who he is as a person. But is he half the musician of, I don't know, the last like 7 people voted off?
Yeah.
No, he's not.
No.
And that was upsetting. I was like, Grace or Willie should have won that damn competition. Willie was poised to win it. I thought everyone knew that.
Willie should have won it.
Willie should have won that competition.
Willie
but
broke
you
your
know
heart
how I feel
time.
About Grace. Grace will out sing everybody and wear a mermaid dress. How dare you? So I just was very upset. I was like, this is trash. This is actual trash. And this is why America honestly shouldn't be voting. Not regular people. Regular people don't know what they can. Well, they hear a note off key and they're like, that was beautiful. Yeah. Regular people don't have a musical ear or an understanding of what it is to stand on a stage and have presence and perform to people in an authentic way. They don't fucking understand it. They kind of do, but they don't know how to judge it. And oof, that was unfortunate.
It really was.
But you know what? Guess who didn't win American Idol?
Jennifer Hudson. Number eight,
baby, and she is an Academy Award winner and several Grammys, I think.
She's number one.
And it's over. Like, bye. Carrie Underwood. Oh, she did win.
She did win.
Who else did? Tori Kelly didn't win, honey. She only made it to the first top 20. Guess Tori Kelly is a huge recording artist.
Clay Aiken. Sorry.
We should stop there. Okay. I love Clay, though.
Let me say that I know a lot of you think that American Idol is this cheesy
trash.
Piece of trash from the early 2000s, and I just have to say, I would agree with you, but they have refined how they edit that show, how they formulate that show, who they get on, and how it gets worked on, and it's actually beautifully done. It's really beautifully done. If you haven't checked it out since in the last 2 or 3 years, you should check it out next season, and we'll just hope for the best because this year we didn't end up
check it
best.
Out. But whatever you do, do not replay the first season of it because you will not make
we
it.
We actually
it does
did
not
that.
Hold up.
It doesn't.
Okay?
We did
and
that.
And Brian Dunkelman,
trash.
So is Ryan, but, you know, he's grown up a little bit.
No, Ryan is the one vestige of American Idol that I do not understand and have no time
Ryan.
For. I have no...
I have respect for him because he has about 42 jobs and I'm into it.
So you think he's Jamaican?
He's basically Jamaican. It's cool. just don't watch the first season. But you know what we did notice from the first season? Is that people, when they got bad criticism, they talked back. They fought back. They insulted the judges.
Yeah.
They walked out of the auditions. Like, they screamed outside. People don't do that anymore. And
no.
I'm like, what happened to those days?
They watched enough American Idol to realize that they were going to look like fools in about 20 years.
God, it's so... People, they do have a better understanding of what's good. And we are thankful for that because it has shaped our tastes. But at the same time, we're still... we're still coming up short with the picks.
Most of the people now that come in that at least get airtime, they're starting at a certain level and working up from there. At the beginning,
and most of them they find are online actually, and then they bring them to do it in person.
Well, that's where they found Willie, because Willie had done a viral video. But in the beginning, when nobody kind of really knew what American Idol was, and everybody was showing up, and also Fox thought maybe it was more entertaining to show these lunatics.
Which it was. It was good. It was really funny.
But now these lunatics, oh my God, we looked at them and they're like,
they're outrageous.
Who are you, Simon? When have you ever sung anything?
Right, right.
I'm going to be a big star, Simon. He's like, right, go be a big star somewhere else, please. Yes, thank you.
Who was the black woman that was in there and he kept pronouncing her name wrong?
Oh.
And she was like, you're saying my name wrong. And then she was like, I'm taking my black ass out of here. And I was like, oh my God, American Idol used to be lit. And now it's just like docile trash.
The racism and the sexism.
Oh, it's just.
I mean, Brian Dunkelman's hands all over the knees.
The knees of contestants, female contestants. It was like, wait, did she tell you it was okay to have your hand there? That must be why you got fired.
I am sure there's stories.
I'm sure someone was like,
also, he wasn't
not.
Funny, charming, intelligent,
oh, he was
witty,
awful.
Anything.
So awkward.
And I'm sorry. Ryan, congratulations on your career. And I'll leave it there.
I'm proud of you.
Thanks, babe. So that's it. That's all we've got for the week.
That's it. We are back. We are bitchy. We are queens.
Wait a minute.
Wait, what?
No.
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 We're back.
Yes.
We're so happy to catch up with you guys. Just us, you know?
Just us.
And
babe, you're enough. You are enough.
Tell me about it. I know.
You don't need to have special guests.
I think that advice is actually for you.
I'm definitely talking to myself.
Are you listening to yourself?
I'm just talking to myself right
now. Okay, great.
Yeah.
All right, you guys. I'm going to get ready. I'm going on a date with my black Illinois Wesleyan alumni, which is literally four of us. And we're going to go have a dinner in the village. Vegan, you understand.
And I've got a date with some avocados and chips.
That's so sad.
Well, what is my life without you, babe?
Ripe
avocados.
Okay, anyway. It's been so nice to catch up with just us again. I hope all of you have a beautiful day. Remember that we love you and you are enough. And we'll see you next time on The Swirl with Bree and Dave.
And scene.
Boom, ah! Boom, 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 boom.
The Swirl with Bree and Dave was created using Anchor, and you can find us on Spotify, iTunes, or wherever you get your favorite podcasts.
We hope you'll subscribe, and if you want to tell us how we're doing, please leave us a rating or a review.
If you'd like to follow us on social media, I'm Brianna Marie, and he's Dave Lyrics.
Music for this podcast is by Bo Black.
Thanks for listening, everybody. Look forward to having you back for the next episode.
Taste the swirl, everyone!
Bye.